Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Thank you for joining the Relax Back UK show. Now, we are having real problems with our teeth.
So the biggest reason kids go into the hospital to be put under GA is because of tooth decay. Yeah, it's staggering, really.
Children and adults are both suffering. I speak to dentist Vanessa Creven about the problem and what to do about it. Then, a very different topic.
In the UK, there's around 10,000 care leavers every year who, you know, in quite a quick fell swoop, leave their, what in the industry is called their corporate parents. That's the local authority who looks after them.
Leon Ward of the charity My Bank talks about the issues that care leavers have to deal with, and specifically looking after their money. So please do stay tuned for a great show. Thank you. Vanessa Creven is a dentist, and I started off by asking her just how big is the problem of people not being able to see an NHS dentist?
Yeah, I think it's an issue that, you know, the NHS is seeing more and more common. I think there was a new research to say that up to one in four people living in the United Kingdom have not been able to see an NHS dentist in over 2 years, and up to one in 10 have been longer than 5 years. There's a huge issue in seeing an NHS dentist at the moment, unfortunately.
So actually, I did a little bit of digging because I knew we were going to talk about this sort of stuff. And I found, it was a report that the BBC made. I don't know where they got their information, but I like to believe what the BBC says. That in August, 91% of dentists in England weren't taking any more adult patients. And 79% of dentists weren't taking any more children on as patients. This is serious stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it's judging by that research, it's a completely overwhelmed system right now, right? You know, up to 91% of dentists are at max capacity. And, you know, when you speak to dentists, they are what they would say is overworked in the NHS. You know, they have too many patients for one or two dentists to see. And what that means then, Mike, long term, is that people aren't getting regular checkups, which means preventative care can't really be completed. And as such, when someone does eventually get in to see the dentist, they need more extensive work like root canals.
It's not preventive care. It's they turn up when they've got a real problem and the problem is more serious. Yeah. So are you actually an NHS dentist?
No, I am a dentist, but I work in Ireland.
Okay. All right. Some more of the digging around I did. I got more and more shocked as I looked into this. The biggest cause of hospital admissions for children 6 to 10 years old, what is it?
It's admission to the hospital because of tooth decay. Yeah, and that's a stat that's common in Ireland and in the UK. So the biggest reason kids go into the hospital to be put under GA is because of tooth decay. Yeah, it's staggering, really.
Yeah, and so this is not just a little half-hour trip to the hospital. This is to have a general anesthetic operation, which if you can avoid a general anesthetic, it's a sensible thing to do, really. I was just horrified by this.
I know, and you're right, because a general anesthetic is not something to be taken lightly. It normally means a hospital stay, maybe a night before, and the child is put to sleep to have treatment done. And that is common, you know, not just in the UK, but also across Ireland as well. So it's a real problem we are seeing right across the board with kids.
Yeah, and it's the really sad thing about all this is something that is pretty much completely possible to avoid.
Yes. Well, what I would say is, you know, nowadays there is so much sugar in our diets compared to even 20 or 30 years ago. And there's no question about that. You know, there's so much sugar in kids' diets, in particular between fruit juices, yogurts, you know, and also frequency of eating, right? So I have three kids myself, so I know how difficult it can be to get kids to eat. And sometimes you're just trying to get your kids to eat and not thinking about how frequently they are eating. So the more frequently we eat, the more risk actually that we are to have tooth decay. And the reason that is, it's not the amount of sugar we eat as opposed to how often we eat the sugar that causes tooth decay.
Are there any other factors at work here, any social factors, particularly with the kids 6 to 10 years old?
We do see, you know, fluoridated areas. So kids using fluoride-based toothpaste is really, really important. Fluoride is the most effective ingredient at preventing tooth decay. So having fluoride in your water and fluoride in your toothpaste really does help. The other thing specifically in the UK is access. So there's a really geographical disparity in access to the NHS dentist, right? Some areas are okay and can accept new patients. Unfortunately, other areas are very much more deprived. So that can be also an issue when it comes to kids and their oral health.
Putting fluoride in the water is a massive topic, actually. Some people are all in favour of it and other people sort of recoil in horror. But the fact is, places that have fluoride in water have less tooth decay, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a systematic study completed across Ireland and the UK about five years ago that said pre-fluoridation of water, the tooth decay levels were almost double than what they are post-fluoridation of water. I do understand it's a very contentious topic, but when it comes to your oral health, fluoride is an important ingredient to prevent tooth decay and something we always, as dentists, would encourage you to have in your toothpaste.
Yeah. I'm pretty simple myself. I don't see it as a contentious topic. It works. Put it in the water. Get on with life. Am I just been a bit slow, a bit dim?
No, I think you're being very reasonable, actually, maybe a little rational. Yeah. So it's a really hot topic and it's becoming more and more of a hot topic. But fluoride in the water has been the most effective way at reducing tooth decay right across the nation.
Really interesting. Okay. Generally speaking, as a dentist, what advice can you give to parents then of, you know, well, any kids, but certainly this 6 to 10 year olds who seem to be going into hospital to have teeth removed?
Yeah. So actually in Spotlight, I have an oral care company called Spotlight, and we did a lot of research in kids and the reasons why they get tooth decay and what can help. And what we found was when we were speaking to parents, parents know, you know, brushing their teeth twice a day using a fluoride-based toothpaste is really important, but actually explaining it to kids can be really, really hard. And so what my advice would be is to try and make, as best you can, make toothbrushing as happy an experience as possible. That might mean playing their favorite song when you're brushing their teeth, playing a game. Sometimes an egg timer is really, really helpful for the child to see, okay, I've a few minutes left or I've half the egg timer left, and making it more interactive when the kids are brushing their teeth. But really, brushing twice a day using a fluoride-based toothpaste is so important. And then the other thing, Mike, we always encourage is food-free time. Try and avoid frequent snacking, especially with kids, if possible, because that really does help allow the teeth and the mouth to remineralize and fight that tooth decay that might be happening.
Right. What about flossing? Should you try and get kids to floss?
So kids flossing, I would say from about 7 plus, I would start inducing kids flossing. Flossing is really, really important when they move to their permanent teeth. So when the baby teeth have fallen out and they've moved to their permanent teeth, flossing can become really important. And then we generally start to get our permanent teeth from the age of about 6 plus. Flossing is so, so important, obviously, when it comes to adults as well. And flossing has been linked not only with better oral health, but actually better overall health as well.
Better overall health. I need a bit more help understanding that.
Yeah. So flossing, actually, there's so many links to show that flossing has been linked with better control of blood sugar levels, so better control of diabetes. It's been linked with heart health, coronary heart disease, any atherosclerosis in your body. And the reason that is because if you imagine, floss is actually removing the bacteria in your mouth, right? The point at which your toothbrush just won't hit. And that bacteria can actually enter the body because the mouth is this entryway point to the digestive tract, right? So reducing the microbial load in the mouth has an effect on the overall body as well.
Okay. When I go to the hygienist or the dentist and they say, are you flossing every day? And I sort of mumble and say, well, yes, of course. They do know, don't they? They do know I'm lying.
They do know, but they might be too polite to say otherwise. So we know actually maybe 1 in 8 of us actually floss our teeth and maybe the rest of us are telling little white lies. Your hygienist and your dentist will probably be able to spot if you're not cleaning between your teeth because there is a residue that's left behind. And a tip I always give my patients is there you can get these little floss picks, which are a little bit of floss on a kind of a plastic hook. And I always say, pop them in your bag or pop them in your little coat pocket. And if you're sitting in traffic or if you have a few minutes to spare, that can be a good time also to floss on the go, right? You don't just need to floss in the toilet or in the bathroom.
You can do that sitting on the train and see if it gets you a seat.
Yeah, that's a good way to get a seat on the train.
I had a look at your website, Spotlight Oral Care. And you've got these little hooky things for flossing to help you get a seat on a crowded train, that sort of thing. But I also noticed that you've got whitening products, tooth whitening products. So, and that made me think, okay, tell me about them. Are they safe? Because they essentially that's going to be sort of an acidic sort of thing you're shoving in your mouth, isn't it?
Yeah, whitening in general is very safe if it's done in a tested, like, you know, regulated way. Whitening is very safe. It's a cosmetic treatment. So what you're doing is in the same way that you have tea and coffee, red wine and curry stains that can stain your t-shirt, they can also stain your teeth. And so what you do with whitening is you use an active ingredient called hydrogen peroxide, which helps to lift the stains and actually lift the overall shade of the enamel.
Okay, so that's something that is safe to do at home? Or do I have to come and see a dentist like you to get that done?
Yeah, absolutely. You can do both, right? There are whitening treatments that are available at home and there are whitening treatments that are available at the dentist that you can use in the dentist or at home as well. But whitening is very safe to be done at home.
Is it? Okay, even though it's kind of an acidic thing.
Yeah, believe it or not, it's actually not acidic as such as how they work. The way that whitening works is actually the hydrogen peroxide ingredient is active, right? So if you looked at your tooth under a microscope, stains would appear as these big chunky molecules. And how whitening works is the hydrogen peroxide just breaks those down. It just breaks down the stain on the tooth as opposed to changing the pH within the mouth.
Okay. Actually, another question on kind of acidity of teeth. When you've had your breakfast, do you brush your teeth before or after breakfast? That's the question, really.
We always encourage people to brush their teeth actually before breakfast, right? Because after breakfast, you might have had coffee, tea, orange juice. All of these things are actually quite acidic. And if you're brushing after breakfast, you can have the tendency to actually physically wear away the teeth by brushing in an acidic environment. So ideally brushing before breakfast.
Okay. All right. Now Christmas is coming. Lots of Christmas treats. Is that going to be more of a problem for our teeth?
I think Christmas is a wonderful time and I would never tell people not to have the extra Christmas pudding or the extra treat. But there are ways that we can combat maybe an increased risk of tooth decay. So using your toothpaste or using a fluoride-based toothpaste in the morning and evening, incorporating a mouthwash, I would say at lunchtime or throughout the day, not rinsing after you've brushed your teeth, letting the active ingredients seep into the teeth to do their work, and maybe using a sonic toothbrush would really help you, I suppose, in those busy periods where you might be eating more treats than normal.
I did a little bit more research actually on mince pies. Every year in the UK, 800 million to 1 billion mince pies are consumed, which is an average of about 19 each. I don't know if those statistics might be similar in Ireland, but that was, I found, pretty surprising.
Yeah, that is really high, but I'm not in any way surprised. I would beggar to think how many mince pies I've eaten over the Christmas period, you know, last year or the year before.
Yeah, I think probably I'm above average. I think I might need
me too.
19, yeah. I love all the Christmas stuff, all the Christmas goodies. This kind of advice and making me kind of think a little bit about teeth at this time of year is probably a good thing. But if people are listening to this, and particularly if they're struggling with getting kids to clean teeth and look after their teeth, can you please give us a good resource to provide some help for struggling parents and struggling people?
You know, I think there are great resources out there just on even social media. So we do a ton of informational content on our Instagram and our TikTok at Spotlight Oral Care. You know, top tip ways of how I found it easier to brush my kids' teeth and what our research has shown and through our patients and customers as well. There's a number of dentists that are really active on TikTok and social media that can really help with that. And then the other thing I would always encourage is if you have small children, sometimes having characters on the toothbrush can really, really help, you know, giving the toothbrush a little name. I know we have two characters in here, Looney and Freddie, and they're always, you know, people love to engage with the characters no more than in a TV program.
All right. That sounds like good advice. So look, Vanessa, thank you very much indeed for chatting. And I will leave you to go off, enjoy Christmas and plenty of mince pies.
Thank you so much, Mike.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck. Fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Before the next section, I want to tell you about a book that includes contributions and quotes from guests that have been on the Relax Back UK show over the years. It covers a wide range of topics with help from with pain, exercise, cancer, cannabis-derived medication, long COVID, and many, many other topics. It's called Cut the Crap, Ask the Questions That Matter About Your Health, and it's available from Amazon and Kindle. And it really is a great gift for anyone that is interested in their health or the health of their family. Now, the next guest is Leon Ward from My Bank Charity, and he helps young adults who are coping with everything when they leave the care system. So my first question to him was, how many care leavers are there each year in the UK?
Yeah, and my bank, we're a financial education charity dedicated to creating a financially fluent population. We work with everybody, but in the UK, there's around 10,000 care leavers every year who, you know, in quite a quick fell swoop, leave their, what in the industry is called their corporate parent. That's the local authority who looks after them. So 10,000 a year.
All right. Now, they're going to need a lot of things. I would imagine, a lot of help when, you know, they're 18, presumably. So, that, you know, they're not fully, they are adults in the eyes of the law, but, you know, sure, they're not fully fledged adults yet, really. Is financial education kind of one of the most important things they need? I mean, you know, they need a job. They need somewhere to live. I can imagine it being important, but is it the most important thing they need?
Well, both of the two things you just mentioned about finding somewhere to live and securing a job is financial education, because the sort of topics we talk about are things like signing tenancy agreements, how to protect your deposit, how to raise the funds for your deposit, how to pay your rent on time, how to manage your utility bills as absolute needs, how to manage your needs versus wants, etc. So I think trying to see financial education and fluency as a sort of wholesale package is probably the right way, the right way to do it. And 67% of care leavers told us they experience anxiety about money, and we all know the impacts of anxiety on other areas of our life. So it would be a significant contributor to better outcomes for young care experienced people.
Okay. Is there more to it than, look, just don't spend more money than you've got coming in, you know? And that's quite a short course. I just gave it.
Partly, but lots of young people don't know where they get money from. So lots of people don't know how to access income if they're out of work, for instance, or if they want to have a job, perhaps a part-time job, and start their own business. We cover all of those sorts of issues in our courses. And of course, money in, money out is the starting point. So that's what we call budgeting. But beyond that, what else? Because the basic skill of budgeting isn't enough to manage your finances carefully and properly and to maximize your finances, which is what we also teach in our courses.
Okay. So how many of these 10,000 young people leaving the care system each year, you know, how many kind of you help?
It varies across the country depending on where we are. So in London, for instance, we work with a much much more significant number of care leavers. Lots of young people that come on our courses don't actually tell us that they're care experienced, because there's something about them not wanting to self-identify as that all the time. You know, they're human beings, they're not just care leavers. So we don't have a figure, but we think, from talking to our local authority partners, it's quite high, in the sort of 70-80% range of certain local authorities that we work with.
Okay, all right. So you do these courses via local authorities, by the sound of things?
Yeah, and through other partners too. So you know, youth clubs, youth workers, teachers, etc., book us in, and we deliver these expert-led courses. So a young person might access us through a local authority, but say you're a care experienced young person who's also a scout, for instance, you might access a My Bank session through that. So one of the challenges we have as an organisation, which lots of charities have, is really tracking every individual learner, because we're booked in by people that they're already connected to.
Right. And it would seem there is a need, actually, because I did a little bit of digging in statistics before we chatted, and I was looking at 19 to 21 year olds who are not in education, employment or training. So for the whole population, it's 12% of 19, which actually struck me as an enormously high figure. What they're doing.
It is. And you know, ultimately, our position on this is that financial fluency is for everybody. And most people have not had a financial education, right? Not a formal, objective financial education. Most people had maybe a budget chat around the dinner table when they were kids or whatever, you know, relying on families. But the UK's general population is pretty financially illiterate, and there's lots of statistics out there that support that. Something like 52% of adults in the UK, I believe, under the Money and Pension Service, remember receiving a financial education, which means almost half the country didn't. So, yeah. So ultimately, this is something for everybody.
Yeah. I don't think I did at school. I just sort of,
yeah. And if I was to, you know, to ask
along, really.
Yeah, and if I ever ask a conference room full of people, how many of you remember talking about money at school? There's only one or two hands go up, and they tend to be privately educated. You know, in the private school sector, they do talk about money, mainly because they've got it. So there's a sort of, you know, commonality about that. Whereas in the state sector, it's not something we do very well. And we've got other research which shows that teachers' confidence to teach money is also quite low, which would make sense because they also didn't receive a financial education when they were kids. So you've got this perpetuating cycle, which is most people go to school. That's the right place to deliver good comprehensive financial education. But the people delivering it, their own financial literacy is quite poor because they've grown up in a country that doesn't prioritize it. And my view is you don't need to be an expert on everything all the time. You know, when you renew your car insurance, you become an expert on car insurance for 48 hours whilst you're comparing quotes and ringing them up and, you know, trying to get them down in price. Then you forget about it for 11 months. That's fine. There's other things that come into your life that money interacts with that you need to skill up on at different times.
Okay. But just back to the statistic, though, this 12% of 19 to 21-year-olds not in education, employment or training, that same group of people, if it's taken as care leavers, that percentage shoots up to 41%, which again, you know, 41% of 10,000 a year. This is a lot of people.
Yes, and obviously it's because there's quite complex circumstances. So lots of care experienced people don't live in one place their whole childhood. They live in multiple places, moving from foster carer to foster carer, potentially into supported accommodation run by the local authority. It's quite a lot to deal with when you're under 18. Plus the fact all the emotional trauma they're going through. Any TV program that talks about young people in care often reflects on the fact that they feel rejected, they feel isolated, they feel different to their peers. They can't rely on the family unit in the same way that people that grow up in one household between 0 and 18 do. So it's no wonder that when they enter adulthood, it's a challenging circumstances for them because they don't have many people to turn to, and that's a problem. There's loads of amazing charities out there that work with young care experienced people. We're one of them, you know, delivering our sliver, but there are others that deliver much more.
And certainly earlier in the chat, you said a lot of people's financial education is from home, you know, around the dinner table, you know, however good or bad that might be. And, you know, the sad fact is a lot of these people won't be getting that, even that.
So exactly. And you know, it's really tricky because there was some research out recently, which is that the average score of an adult with regard to managing money well day to day was around 59%. So as I say, you know, not every adult in the UK is also good at this. And social workers and youth workers and people that are in touch with care experienced young people also have poor financial literacy by and large. So, you know, where they are able to have conversations about money, it doesn't mean it's right or factual. And that's the other challenge that we have. And what we try and do is go in and give them accessible learning that is fact-checked, verified, objective, and removes the big brands. We don't really talk about the high street banks. We're not trying to sell products or get you to take products out or whatever. We're just explaining what the products are so then you as an individual can go out and make an informed choice.
Yep. All right. So we've established that there's a need for this and it can be very useful. Do your courses work? Have you got any nice statistics to show, you know, we've given this number of courses and actually the evidence seems to be that it helps, it works.
Yeah, we see around 50,000 young people a year, and those in our young adult space that get a sort of a deeper intervention with My Bank, between 2 and 4 days our courses last. First of all, they get a level one in personal finance management, so it's an accredited qualification, but also our award-winning program, which is the Money House, where young people come to a space that we've kitted out that looks like a flat. So the idea being that this could be somewhere you potentially live in that learning space. We have seen and young people have reported to us, a 32% reduction in missed priority payments like rent and energy bills. And also fewer than 2% of our young people faced eviction once they've secured accommodation. So, and that's low. You know, people that have never lived on their own before typically have higher eviction rates. So we're really happy with the impact that our work has. There are some other statistics as well, like we see an increase in the number of young people that have a small amount of savings. And in our world, the savings is £50. And the number of young people that go from 0 to £50 in that time is quite high after our programmes.
Okay. All right. So this is very encouraging. You mentioned a little bit there how long the courses are. Can you just kind of say that again? How long the courses are? How long it takes? Is there any homework involved? Where do they happen? That sort of thing.
Yeah, it's between 2 and 4 days, and we have two models. One is young people either come to us in our fixed spaces, and we've got one in Glasgow, one in Manchester, one in Birmingham, and four in London, or we go to them. So if they're booked in by a community partner, a religious group or a youth and community group, whomever, we will go in and run the session with them. Most of our young people go on our 2-day course, which is a light touch dive on everything, really. So we do budgeting, borrowing, banking, saving, interest rates, income, understanding your payslip, etc., etc. If you want more, if the young people have got more time, then they can come on a 4-day program, which is all of those basics, but we spend longer on them. And we go into more detail around that transition to independent living. So we'll cover things like tenancy agreements, what happens at the end of your tenancy, how your landlord goes around the house trying to deduct things for, I don't know, marks on the wall or whatever. So we teach people more deeply, depending if they can give us that time, because we recognise not everybody can give us 4 full days.
Okay, all right. And so who teaches these things? Who
We
teaches
have
the
a team
course?
of trainers. So around my bank, across the country, we've got around 40 trainers who go into schools, community groups, or our spaces to deliver these programs. So we've got, 40 people out there today delivering. In fact, some of your listeners, some of their
So
kids
are they
might be receiving a
volunteers?
session. No, they're all paid.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, they're all
Okay.
our paid staff.
All right. So you've got quite a big staff to look after as well.
We've got 70 overall. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So it really does sound like you are, giving a lot of courses to a lot of people, and from the statistics you gave, it appears to be working.
It's working for our group, definitely. One of the challenges I would say is that, and this is where that kind of concept of financial fluency comes in. Financial education, you can't do it in 2 days because some of the content you're learning might not be relevant for you at that moment. Whilst we'll teach you how to read a payslip, given your statistic of those that are not in education, employment, training, it might be another 6 months before they actually see a payslip for themselves. So, really, what we're calling for is for a more systematic approach across the country. And as I said earlier, most people go to school, so it makes sense to start there. But most people also go to work. And I think, and we think, that the workplace is another good avenue to attract people and to deliver financial education. And as a health station, imagine if every new NHS employee was offered money lessons as part of their induction into the NHS. You'd suddenly be reaching millions of people who in the workplace have access to good quality financial education that's relevant to them and applicable in the moment.
Have any employers taken you up on the offer?
Yes, we run several with one of our funders, Berkeley Housing. It's a house builder. We teach their apprentices every year. So every new income of apprentices coming in, we get them a week before their first payslip and run a money school with them to effectively get them to think about their pension contributions and what they want to do with that, thinking about their net and gross pay and understanding the difference. We do a budget session with them. So we've got employers that do engage us in that way, and we're always happy to talk to others that want us in-house.
Okay. So if people are listening to this, either because they are a young person and are thinking, actually, this could be quite useful to me, or maybe they employ a load of young people, or perhaps they run a youth club, whatever, and they think, actually, arranging something like this for the, young people that come to my organization or I look after could be a very useful thing. How can they get in touch with you?
Really simple. Just go on our website, which is mybank.org. It's mybnk.org, and there is a book a session form. So if you submit your details on there, one of our regional managers will reach out to you.
Excellent. Right, Leon, thank you for chatting. This does sound potentially very useful, but it can really help a lot of people. So many thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to the guests on this week's show, and they were dentist Vanessa Creven and Leon Ward from the charity My Bank. Please remember to check out the book based on the Relax Back UK show. It's called Cut the Crap, Ask the Questions That Matter About Your Health. And remember to have a healthy week. Until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimising your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.